Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, another installment in our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. Our focus today is on Islamophobia, particularly as it pertains to American Catholics. Only 14% of Catholics have a favorable view of Muslims. Are Catholics more predisposed to be Islamophobic than adherents to other faiths? While the mass media often portrays Muslims in a negative light, it appears that Catholic media does so even more frequently. Is it a matter of bias or bad reporting? And what about the role of church leaders? Pope Francis has garnered a reputation as one of the most open and inclusive pontiffs in history. What is his message about Muslims, and is his flock getting it? Living Questions, coming up on Midday, right after the news. And welcome, everybody. It's Midday on this Monday. Glad you're with us. I'm Tom Hall. Today, another installment in our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in partnership with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. Our focus today is on Islamophobia, particularly as it pertains to American Catholics. There's an organization at Georgetown University in Washington called the Bridge Institute. It's a multi-year research project that seeks to place the academic study of Islamophobia in the public square. Last month, the Bridge Institute issued a report called Danger and Dialogue, American Catholic Public Opinion and Portrayals of Islam. It examines how Islam is treated in the Catholic media, what kinds of books about Islam are sold in Catholic bookstores, and what Catholics know and think in general about Islam. The findings of the report are dismaying. Only 14% of American Catholics have a favorable view of Muslims. They are less likely than the general public to know a Muslim personally. And in articles in Catholic publications that discuss Islam, the overall sentiment of the headlines is often angry and negative. So in an election cycle that has been marred by intolerance to several ethnic minorities, Muslims have been singled out by Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, who has called for a total and complete ban on allowing Muslims into the country. The constitutionality of that proposal aside, the level of vitriol aimed at American and foreign Muslims has been amplified as our political discourse has become more and more harsh. Jordan Denari Duffner of the Bridge Institute joins me in the studio. She's the author of Danger and Dialogue. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Father Michael Calabria is a Franciscan friar and the director of the Arab and Islamic Studies Department at St. Bonaventure University in upstate New York, and he joins us on the line today from Buffalo. Father Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
Good to have you. And Dr. Jerusha Lamptey is Associate Professor of Islam and Ministry at Union Theological Seminary. She joins us from New York City. Dr. Lamptey, forgive me for butchering your name there. It won't happen again.
No problem. And thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show. So, Jordan Denari Duffner, you wrote this report. Why limit your research to Catholics and their relationship in particular to the Muslim community?
Catholics were of particular interest to us because we're at a Catholic and Jesuit university. As many people know, Georgetown is the oldest Catholic and Jesuit university in the country. And we as a Catholic institution and the Catholics that are working for the Bridge Initiative, we sort of felt a responsibility to look at how our own community views Islam and Muslims, particularly during this heightened period of Islamophobia, as you mentioned.
And do Catholics view the Islamic community differently than the general population?
Well, I think we see the general American population and American Catholics both viewing Muslims negatively at times. It's not always a massive portion of the population, but a sizable one. You know, as we saw in our report, 3 in 10 Catholics have expressly unfavorable views. And then another 45% or so say, you know, I'm not really sure. I'm not sure what my opinion is. It's kind of neutral, or it's not expressly positive, at least. And we see similar things in the general American population as well. I think one of the things that we drew out in the report that we've also seen nationwide is this association of Islam with violence or Islam with terrorism. And so that's something that we looked at in the report as well, and we can see across the country.
And Father Michael Calabria, you bring to this the perspective not only of a scholar, but also as a member of the clergy. I mean, why do you think that Catholics might be more Islamophobic than people in other faith traditions?
Well, Catholics are part of the larger society, larger American culture. So indeed, they absorb, like everyone else does, these prejudices and these attitudes that the rest of the society and population is subjected to. I think that American Catholics also are not accessing good sources of information. Clearly, Jordan's report has indicated that Catholics often are reading materials that present Islam in a particularly violent way and in a particularly disparaging way. We're dealing with also a certain mythology, a mythology of Christians versus Muslims. I think this is a prevailing attitude. You hear this from people that, oh, Christians and Muslims have been fighting for centuries, and so ISIS is just another manifestation of that. So on the whole, I think we're dealing with lack of good information. People are not turning to dependable sources of information, and they're picking up on rather spurious sources of information in the media.
And Dr. Lamptey, you've done a lot of work about people getting their information from sources other than the media, in particular, people who have personal relationships, interreligious relationships, Muslims and Catholics. So we'll talk about the messages that folks are receiving from the media in general. But also, Jordan's report found that those Catholics who did know Muslims personally tended to have a better view of Islam than those who did not. Does it work the other way in the Muslim community towards the Catholic community, do you think?
Well, certainly I think it does. I mean, I would not attribute this specifically to Catholics nor to Muslims, but what I would say is that there's a humanizing factor. And that when you are reading about someone or looking at, I really like Father Michael's phrase, mythology, when you're looking at the images of that mythology put in media or in writing, that's one thing. But when you are eating with someone, talking with someone, living with someone, working on a project with someone, they become more three-dimensional. And that doesn't mean that every encounter will lead to a positive outcome, but I think you begin to see not only that these people that are being spoken about are actually people, but you also begin to see a more diverse array of stories. And so what you are presented in the mythology is not actually what you're seeing among the people. Now, they may be a different color. They may be speaking a different language. It's just that there's more diversity when you start to actually encounter other people. And certainly that is present with Muslim encounters with Christians and the other way around.
Dr. Lamptey, there are about 2 billion Christians globally around the world, and about half of those, so a billion, are Catholics, and there are about 1.5 billion Muslims worldwide. Is the level of antipathy between Catholics and Muslims in the United States different in any degree than it is in other places around the globe?
Well, I mean, I find this question interesting because, I mean, of course, I can't speak to every context, and every context has its particular history and its particularly contemporary situation. But what I would say is that I'm somewhat shocked by this report because I spend a lot of my time in interfaith and interreligious dialogue, and especially a lot of time looking at the theologies and the pronouncements and the official teachings of the Catholic Church on Islam. And so what I would say is that I don't know if in other contexts it's different than in the U.S. I think people figure out ways to live with each other. We're pretty good about that, except under certain circumstances. But what I'm shocked with is that there is this negative perception, even though there's all this existing theology and thinking coming from Catholic and Muslim sides about why there shouldn't be this negative perception about the things in common, about the things that are shared. So perhaps that's not an answer to your question, but yeah.
Well, it is interesting because you're in a very ecumenical environment. You're at the Union Theological Seminary in New York, and there are people of varying different faiths who are working and teaching and studying there. So, you know, you are in an environment where you have certainly access to people of different faiths. And I guess there are a lot of people who don't.
Sure. And that is a big issue. And I think that this report points to that. I don't think that Jordan's report points to the fact that the number one and singular solution to these negative perceptions or to Islamophobia is more human interaction. That's not going to be the only solution. But the report does indicate that it will be a helpful piece of the puzzle.
Sure. Dr. Jerusha Lamptey is at the Union Theological Seminary. She's on the line from New York City. Father Michael Calabria is a Franciscan friar and on the faculty of St. Bonaventure University in upstate New York. He's with us from Buffalo. And Jordan Denary Duffner of the Bridge Institute at Georgetown University is with me here in the studio. So, Jordan, the evidence that there seems to be ample evidence in your report that those Catholics who get their information about Islam from Catholic media in particular have a greater proclivity towards anti-Islamic views. So why is that? What sort of information are they getting and what's that all about?
This was a surprising finding to us when we were going through the results of the poll that we commissioned. And, you know, I don't think that we can totally blame the Catholic media that these people are consuming for the views that they have. But we can look at some of the other findings in the report about Catholic media to shed light on why perhaps Catholics who frequently consume Catholic media have these views. One of those things is that, as you mentioned in your introduction, there is a lot of negative and angry sentiment in headlines that are about Islam coming from these publications. There's also a frequent association of Islam with ISIS. Half of the time that the word Islamic was used in Catholic publications, it was in reference to the Islamic State terrorist group. And I think lastly, something we should look at is the influence of the Islamophobia network, per se. Individuals who have a history of spreading fear and misinformation about Muslims in national secular media who are also directing some of their efforts at influencing Catholic conversations about the religion of Islam.
And what that means is that there are particular writers who have affiliations that are proven with anti-Islamic groups who are writing in Catholic publications and promoting a particular point of view about Islam.
Right. And one of the most prominent figures that we looked at in the report is Robert Spencer. He's someone who is known for the Ground Zero Mosque controversy that we saw back in 2010 and the Draw Muhammad cartoon controversy, some of the Metropolitan subway ads that we saw that associate Islam with violence. And he's been known in the past for spreading this narrative about Islam and violence in national sort of secular media. And so we were surprised to see the amount of writing that he does for Catholic publications and how often he's actually cited as an expert in some Catholic media.
And Father Michael, when you talk about the mythology, this term, the Islamophobia industry, which is the first, it's a term that, you know, first I think I encountered just a few years ago. Is that something that Catholic scholars like yourself and your students are aware of? Are they hip to this?
I think many people, not only my students, but I think adult learners as well, are very surprised to hear that there is a truly organized and extremely well-funded Islamophobia industry. This has been documented, but people think that when they hear an Islamophobic comment, they may not identify it as Islamophobia, they may just simply identify it as a comment about Islam, that people at least at first blush, will take that as an accepted fact, particularly if they're hearing it from someone on TV, if they see it in print, if they hear it from the pulpit. So people are hearing these things, and they may not necessarily know the ultimate source of that piece of quote-unquote information or, in many cases, misinformation. So I encourage people to know your sources, not only my students, but again, the adult learners that I speak to know your sources, know who is funding an institute, who is funding a particular think tank. I know that's a lot of work, but in this day and age, when we have social media where pieces of information are disseminated in any number of forms. It's incumbent upon us as the consumers of media to know where that information is coming from and why that particular perspective is being presented. I find that very often when people express what I would call Islamophobic remarks, it's coming out of their own particular personal experience or circumstances, perhaps their political perspective, rather than them having good, hard information about Islam. In other words, Islamophobia often fits into a person's pre-existent worldview. Many people find it comfortable to look at the world in terms of black and white. We know who the good people are. We know who the bad people are. I mean, this was particularly apparent during the Cold War. We could identify the communists as the bad person. Well, now in this world, it becomes increasingly difficult for people to identify, quote unquote, the bad person. And so people feel comfortable if they have a category. They want a category. They want an easy answer to who is good and who is bad. And again, I turn to my term that Dr. Lampe noted, mythology. We have to break through this mythology. Mythology that is often perpetuated by people within the church, knowingly or unknowingly.
You're listening to Living Questions, our series on religion in the public sphere that you hear once a month here on Midday, WIPR. We're producing this series in conjunction with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. My guests today are Jordan Denary Duffner of the Bridge Institute at Georgetown University. She's the author of a new report called Danger and Dialogue, American Catholic Public Opinion and Portrayals of Islam. Father Michael Calabria is a Franciscan friar and the director of the Arab and Islamic Studies Department at St. Bonaventure University in upstate New York. He joins us on the line from Buffalo. And Dr. Jerusha Lamptey is Associate Professor of Islam and Ministry at Union Theological Seminary. She's on the line from New York City. You are welcome to join us as well. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780. That's 410-662-8780. Drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. More on Danger and Dialogue when we come back. Stick around.
This is your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday, and I'm very glad about that fact. By the way, coming up tomorrow, a conversation with candidates for mayor of Baltimore. I'm sorry to report that Democratic Senator Catherine Pugh, who had accepted our invitation to appear on tomorrow's program 6 weeks ago, has apparently changed her mind and decided not to appear. Her representatives have declined to give us a specific reason for her change of heart. But Republican Alan Walden and the Green Party's Joshua Harris will be here, as well as former Mayor Sheila Dixon. She will join us. She came in second in the Democratic primary last spring, and she announced recently that she's mounting a write-in campaign in the November 8th election. So that's tomorrow on Midday, conversation about the Baltimore mayor's race. And if you're joining us today, it's Living Questions here on Midday. We're talking about Islamophobia, particularly among American Catholics. A new study from the Bridge Initiative at Georgetown University is entitled Danger and Dialogue, American Catholic Public Opinion and Portrayals of Islam. Joining me in the studio, Jordan Denary Duffner. She's the author of the report. On the line from New York City, Dr. Jerusha Lamptey, Associate Professor of Islam and Ministry at Union Theological Seminary. And with us from Buffalo, Father Michael Calabria. He's a Franciscan friar and the director of the Arab and Islamic Studies Department at St. Bonaventure University. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780. Send us a tweet. Our handle is @MiddayTomHall. If you want to send us an email, midday@wipr.org. Have a couple calls. I want to get to them right away. Brad in Columbia, welcome to Midday and Living Questions.
How you doing?
Good. How you feeling?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to mention recent history for our country and others in the world. This is comparative to Nazi Germany propaganda against the Jews, Native American propaganda against them for creating fear for them, and the Japanese Americans that were interred that George Takei talks about all the time. I mean, I would like to get an information about that as far as comparing it to what's happening with the Catholic religious right. Being an atheist, I'm not really that invested in the non-secular area.
Mm-hmm.
Take your call or your information. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for your call, Brad. Dr. Lamptey, what do you think about that? I mean, is this just part of an historical trend that many religious traditions have encountered or ethnic groups have encountered throughout history? Are they one of a piece, or is this distinguished in any way?
Well, I have to say that I'm always hesitant to try to draw these parallels and draw them neatly, because I think all of these situations to which Brad referred are situations of great pain and trauma that lasts and continues to today. And so I'm always hesitant to just make a simple analogy amongst them. However, I do think there are at least some rhetorical analogies, meaning that the speech and the fervor are familiar, and the dehumanization of people. And so the fact that there can be a presidential candidate that will call for a complete and total ban of Muslims, and that will resound with large swaths of the public. And I should say, not necessarily resound. I think it resounds very clearly with some people. But on the other hand, it also is something that many other people can overlook and not be not see as something that's totally egregious. And so I think that there are, in the way that Muslims are being spoken about, there are certainly some crossovers in the language. I do think that the constitutional question and the implementation questions are still up in the air. I would acknowledge, however, that Muslims in this country and allies of Muslims in this country right now are concerned. We're not in the midst of the physical violence. Well, in some ways we are, in terms of profiling, in terms of harassment on the street, but it is not akin to what happened during the Holocaust at this point. But people are scared.
Of course, and there has been, of course, a number of reports that have documented an increase in Islamophobia and anti-Muslim violence here in the United States, even that parallels the campaign, the current presidential campaign. Kathy in Severn, welcome to Midday and Living Questions. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. I don't know if you can hear me, but
we can. You're
okay,
coming
great.
In loud and clear.
I wanted to put out a ray of hope in Baltimore. I'm so saddened to hear. I'm a Catholic. I'm very saddened to hear the emphasis in the Catholic media. I wanted to put a shout out to an organization for which I volunteer, which is Asylee Women Enterprises in Baltimore City, and we helped people seeking asylum, and many of these people are Muslim, and several groups of sisters, Catholic sisters, are sheltering these women in their convents.
What's the name of that organization again, Kathy?
Okay, Asylee, A-S-Y-L-E-E, Women Enterprises.
Great, and Catholic nuns are
they are
in?
Sheltering women in convents. You know, there aren't as many sisters as there used to be. They have some space, and several Catholic orders of sisters are sheltering, also volunteering, helping running this program. And many of the women are, not all, but many of the women are Muslim. They're coming from, they're seeking asylum, so they're coming from danger.
All right. Well, Kathy, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And Jordan Denary Duffner, dig down a little bit into the findings of the report about people who have direct contact, who have Muslim friends or who have participated in interreligious dialogue. They do have a different take on the world than those who do not.
Right. So one of the things that we find about Catholics who know Muslims personally or who have engaged in dialogue or community service activities with them is that they're more positive, they're more proactive, but they're not always more educated. So I'll break that down a little bit. As we discussed before, people that know Muslims personally have more positive views of the religious group as a whole. But they're also more proactive in seeking out information about Muslims. One of the things we found was that among the general American Catholic population, there wasn't a lot of interest to learn more about the religion of Islam. People acknowledged that they didn't know much, but they weren't very curious to take steps to learn more. Those that already know Muslims or who have had an exposure seem to be more interested in that. But we also find that knowing Muslims doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be more religiously literate about the faith. We find across all Catholics, people know that Muslims pray frequently throughout the day, that they fast during the holy month of Ramadan. But they also think that Muslims worship the Prophet Muhammad. In the Islamic tradition, Muhammad is not divine. Muhammad is not God. And so Muslims, while they respect and look to him as a model, they don't worship him as a godlike figure. And so I would have assumed, though, that people who knew Muslims personally would be a little bit more religiously literate. Sometimes they were, other times they weren't. And so that, I think, speaks to the importance of simultaneously having more face-to-face dialogue opportunities, but also more education at the same time.
On 88.1, it's midday. It's our latest installment of Living Questions, our series that examines the role of religion in the public sphere. I'm Tom Hall. You can join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Drop us an email, midday@wypr.org, or send us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. My guest this afternoon, Jordan Denary Duffner, the author of a report called Danger and Dialogue, American Catholic Public Opinion and Portrayals of Islam. Dr. Jerusha Lamptey is on the faculty of the Union Theological Seminary, and Father Michael Calabria, he is on the faculty of St. Bonaventure University in upstate New York. Father Michael, talk about Catholics' understanding of religious practice in the Muslim community. There are some parallels. There may not be parallels that Catholics know a whole lot about or acknowledge, but when you talk to your students about Islam and about the theology of Islam and the practice of Islam, what do you tell them?
Well, I certainly point out what Muslim observance is like, what we ordinarily call the five pillars. That's kind of the first step in introducing someone to Islam. But I go deeper than that. I go to the belief that undergirds those practices. What is it that Muslims feel? How do they look at the world? As I tell my students, although I'm not a Muslim, I have spent a lot of time with Muslims praying, working, recreating, celebrating. And so I try to help them get into, as I say, the shoes, the slippers, or the sandals of Muslims, so that they can, when they hear these things about Islam, they could challenge that with good, dependable information. I mean, the spirituality of Islam has a lot in common with our own Catholic theology. Students are often very impressed, and I would say awed, when we talk about the Muslim practice of prayer and how many times during the day that a Muslim consciously brings God into their day, giving thanks, asking for forgiveness. The whole fasting of Ramadan is such an impressive observance. Students stand in awe of those things, but that's not what the public media presents. I mean, look at what happens during the Hajj. You have 2 to 3 million people converging in Mecca on an annual basis, and it is barely represented in the media. I mean, this is one of the most dramatic expressions of religion, and it goes barely noticed by the majority of non-Muslim Americans. So again, I think once people really learn about Islam, what do Muslims believe? Catholics find a great deal of common ground with Muslims. When we look at the Quran and the biblical stories that are also shared by the Quran, the creation, the creation of humanity, the temptation of humanity, Noah and the flood, Abraham, Joseph and his brothers, Moses and the Exodus, let alone the figures like John the Baptist, Mary and Jesus from the New Testament. There is so much common ground that we Catholics have with Muslims, and yet that's not being conveyed somehow to the believing Catholic community.
And Dr. Lamptey, it's interesting that when an event happens that we hear about a horrific act of ISIS or even so-called domestic terrorism when it takes place in the United States, there's an immediate call from the non-Muslim community for so-called moderate Muslims to speak out and to condemn the actions of people who are doing these things putatively in the name of Islam. When it comes to interreligious dialogue between Christians and Muslims or Catholics and Muslims, there is a responsibility on the part of the Catholic community as well as the Muslim community. And you've done some writing and thinking about this.
Sure. Yeah. I think that there's a sea change, if you will, in Muslim and Muslim ally perspectives on how to combat Islamophobia that has taken place over the last couple years. And what I mean by a sea change is that in line with some aspects of this report, over the last 15 years, things have become very amplified in the American Muslim community in terms of their involvement with other communities, their concern with how they are projected in media, but also the way that they are treated in terms of policy decisions. But I think about 15 years ago, many people and many American Muslims really were convinced that the way to combat Islamophobia and anti-Muslim sentiment in policy, practice, personal perception was to just be more present, to be more involved in dialogue, to, you know, if people, I guess I could frame it as if people just got to know Muslims, then people wouldn't hold these sentiments. What I mean by a sea change is that many of us have devoted a lot of our intellectual and personal lives to doing that. And it has not reaped the benefits that we thought it would. That doesn't mean it hasn't reaped any benefits. I don't want to be completely negative. It has created certain community solidarities and networks and more knowledge. It has. But it hasn't had the instantaneous or drastic corrective that many of us thought that it would. And that really hints that there's more going on. And what has happened in the last couple of years is that people have really started to say, you know, Islamophobia is not just about bad information. It's about people choosing to prioritize bad information. And so back to what Father Michael was saying before, why people need to ask themselves why a negative presentation of Muslims as a universal collective, so all Muslims, all of Islam, why that appeals to them. Why that storyline is so palatable, because factually it's just not accurate. And so if we're talking about facts, you have 1.6 billion Muslims in the world. You can't possibly believe that all those people believe the same thing. I mean, you probably don't even believe the same thing as all of your family members do, never mind, you know, a quarter of the world's population. So factually, and even when it comes to violent acts, it's such a small number, and every single one of those matters, and they're horrific, yes, but it's such a small number of Muslims involved in that. But why do we like those stories so much? And so this is a long way of saying that knowledge of and engagement with Muslims and interreligious dialogue is valuable and important. But we need to be self-reflective. You know, no, saying you have no knowledge about Muslims and Islam is one thing. It's fine. Polls after polls show that most people in this country don't know a Muslim. Fine. But why fill the void with negative information? What is it about ourselves that makes us inclined that way?
Yeah, there's a complexity and a nuance that people sometimes just unable or unwilling to acknowledge. We got to take a quick break, but I do want to get one more phone call in before we do that. Nora in Catonsville, thanks for calling Midday and being part of Living Questions. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm calling because just to speak to the point about getting to know each other. My dad is a Muslim and my mom is a Catholic from Baltimore. They met and it took a long time for my mom's parents in particular to sort of accept the marriage. but once they did, they really did get to know each other very well, and the rest of her family, her cousins. I mean, there's been a lot of sort of cross-cultural exposure that way, and they used to read to us from both the Quran and the Bible and talk about things like Muslim mystics and Catholic mystics, and like St. Francis in Egypt and things like that, and I'm sure your scholars are familiar with, but I loved those stories growing up.
That's great. And have you embraced either tradition now that you're an adult, Nora?
You know, it's interesting. I consider myself Catholic-ish, so I was never formally baptized, but I do go to church. I don't take communion, and I also observe some Muslim like fasting during Ramadan and so forth.
Oh, good for you. Well, thank you for your call, Nora. I really appreciate that.
Thanks for this conversation.
Oh, you're welcome. And so we'd love to hear from other Cathlamish individuals out there listening to Midday. The new report from the Bridge Initiative at Georgetown University is called Danger and Dialogue, American Catholic Public Opinion and Portrayals of Islam. We'll have a link to the report on our website, by the way, wypr.org/midday. We'll have more on countering Islamophobia with Jerusha Lamptey, Michael Calabria, and Jordan Denary Duffner when we come back. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. It's Living Questions here on Midday. Stick around.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
On 88.1 WIPR, I'm Tom Hall. Welcome back to Midday. If you're just joining us, it's the latest installment of our series, Living Questions. Today, a conversation about Islamophobia and the findings of a new report out of the Bridge Initiative at Georgetown University. It's called Danger and Dialogue, American Catholic Public Opinion and Portrayals of Islam. Jerusha Lamptey of the Union Theological Seminary joins us on the line from New York. Michael Calabria of St. Bonaventure University is with us from Buffalo. And here with me in the studio is Jordan Denary Duffner of the Bridge Initiative at Georgetown. She's the author of the report. Lots of calls to get to, and I want to get to them as soon as possible. But first, Father Michael, let me ask you a question. One of the things in Jordan's report talks about this interreligious dialogue, that there are a number of Catholics who use those opportunities to convert or to attempt to convert Muslims to Christianity. Talk a little bit about the theology of Catholicism and Islam. For example, a question that I think comes up a lot, can a non-Christian be saved? Can a Muslim, after he or she dies, go to heaven? How do you answer that question?
Yeah, I think that the Catholic position on other religions and the destiny of people of other faith traditions was articulated extremely well at the Second Vatican Council, both in the document Nostra Aetate, which talked about the Church's relation with non-Christian religions, as well as in the document Lumen Gentium. And in those documents, it's clear, the Church makes clear that God's plan of salvation includes all peoples. Now, people may have, if you will, a quote-unquote more efficient way of getting there than others, but that's not something that we as ministers of the Church can call. I don't know, as a minister in the Church, what is going on in that person's faith tradition and their relationship with God. I think we must approach all peoples of faith with humility. I mean, this is what the Franciscan charism teaches the friars and indeed the larger Franciscan community. Our Franciscan tradition says that when we approach people of other faiths, of other cultures, we approach them with reverence. Now, that's an important word, and I think it's a very deliberately chosen word. Reverence connotes a divine presence. That is, we can say, the Church teaches that when you approach a person of another faith tradition, God is present in that encounter.
Father Michael Calabria from St. Bonaventure University. We're going to go back to the phone calls, back to the phone lines here. I want to talk to Marcia in Baltimore. Marcia, welcome to Midday and Living Questions.
No, I had a comment to make. I want to recommend a good book, The Faith Club, A Muslim, a Christian, a Jew, Three Women's Search for Understanding. And I'm looking at it here on Amazon. I can't remember the author's names, but it is three women. The Muslim, after 9/11, wants to write a book for her children to understand what has happened. And she puts out a notice. I can't remember whether it's in a newspaper or where, but she asks for people of other faiths to join her to write this book. And in the end, they wind up with three women who stick with it. And apparently it goes for 3 or 4 years. As I say, I'm not finished with the book yet. But it gets a little heated sometimes. It starts out very nice. Everybody's cool, calm, and collected. And it eventually gets somewhat heated, but apparently it's going to go on to a long-term relationship. So I just wanted to recommend that book, The Faith Club.
All right. Thank you, Marcia. Appreciate the call, The Faith Club. Dr. Lamptey, you outlined a somewhat pessimistic view about the efficacy of interreligious dialogue. You make the point, and I think it's well-founded, you know, that it's not the answer. If that isn't the answer, or at least the complete answer, it might be part of the answer, of course, what is the answer? I mean, this report is kind of short on conclusions and suggestions, but in your view, what could we be doing more of and better?
Yeah, well, I would clarify that I'm certainly not saying it's not the part of the package of the answer. I've devoted a lot of time, both academic and scholarly and kind of activist time, to interreligious dialogue. So I'm fully committed to the beauty and the necessity of that. I don't think it is the whole package, as you mentioned, though. So some of the other things that I would say are, first, I think, as I alluded to before, I think we have to, for lack of a better phrase, call out Islamophobia. And this report goes a long way to do that, and especially since it's commissioned by Georgetown to reflect on Catholic and Catholic perception. So it's very much self-reflective. It's analyzing oneself. And I think that this is kind of an institutional-level example that individual people need to emulate. We need to call it out for what it is. You know, sometimes we say, well, Muslims do violent things, so we hold these views because they're doing violent things, as if it's understandable or justifiable. And I think it's important to say these views are not positive views. They're not helpful views. They're not effective views. So the first thing I would say is that we need to actually call out Islamophobia and not treat it as if it's, well, that is the reality, or treat it as if, well, if they would just stop being violent, then we would stop feeling this way. We need to label it for what it is. It's like other forms of depictions of whole entire groups in negative fashions, whether it's racism or sexism. Islamophobia shares all the hallmarks of that. And we should bring those kind of critical lenses to bear on Islamophobia. Why do people hold Islamophobic views? Well, why do they hold racist views? Why do they hold sexist views? So that's number one. Number two is, I think that we really need, interreligious dialogue plays into this, but we really need to build networks of solidarity. Not just to, you know, disseminate information about ourselves, but to work together. How can we work together? So Muslims, of course, are going to stand up for Islamophobia, but there's some context, for instance, for myself, where I am not the most effective speaker against Islamophobia, but it would be more effective to have someone from that community speak against it, just as it would be more effective for me in a Muslim context to speak against anti-Christian sentiment. So this solidarity and building relationships, both institutionally and personally, that are founded in a commitment to each other, a commitment to let people have their rights, have people's humanity recognized, and have the diversity in different groups recognized. And so these are two facets of that. I think I did present perhaps a little bit of a pessimistic view, but I'm not pessimistic about this at all. I have seen people hold these views as if they are self-evident, and I have seen them grapple and struggle with them and come to realize that it's not that simple. I do think there's an appeal to simplicity, but it's not that simple.
Tom sends us an email from Frederick. He says, I'm a Catholic in Frederick and was shocked by this program and the statistics. Catholics, Muslims, and Jews all share common Abrahamic roots and so much more. Thanks for your email. Tom, let's go back to the phones. Arnie in Timonium, welcome to Midday and our series Living Questions. Hi, Arnie. How you doing? We have lost Arnie. Jacinta in Baltimore, welcome to the program. Jacinta, thanks for your call.
Thank you. I, first of all, would like to say I'm very grateful for this program today, and I hope a lot of people are listening because it really is an eye-opener. As for me, I just have a comment. I'm blessed to have been raised in a nation that is predominantly Christian but embraces Islam. And that way we grew up knowing each other and looking at each other first and foremost as human beings. Religion never really came in. And from that, I really came to appreciate and learn Islam. My best friend is a Muslim, and I am not that young, I have to say. So, but when I immigrated to America, living in Baltimore, I have to applaud my parish priest, Father Joe Muth. Father Joe Muth has gone out of his way to really embrace the Muslim faith and the people and to let the congregation, the Catholic congregation, know exactly what the Quran is talking about. And we do normally sometimes have meetings with the Muslims so that we can interact. Just like your speaker said, the best thing is people to sit down and talk. And it's unfortunate America has known Islam from the terrorism part of it. But deep down, we are all human beings. And if you do belong to the Islam faith, you'll come to realize truly they have a lot like the Christians. If we have our Ten Commandments, they do have the rules that they go by. And most of them, practically, it is a lot of love.
Well, Jacinta, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. And Jordan Denary Duffner, this report isn't very prescriptive about what the next step is, but the Bridge Initiative with which you're working at Georgetown is an ongoing thing. I mean, what are the next steps as you see them in addition to more interreligious dialogue?
Well, I think first of all, it's about taking the report to the people that need to read it. We've been talking a lot about the importance of Catholics to actually understand what kind of information we're producing and what picture of Islam we're presenting to the Catholic public. And so, you know, I plan to, you know, be bringing this report to Catholic media organizations, publishing companies, all the sorts of entities that we looked at in the report to give them a picture of, you know, this is what you're producing, and ask the question, is this what you want to be producing? They can make the decision moving forward about what they would like to do, but just so that they're aware about it. Also, we hope that it gets in the hands of clergy, religious educators, people like that, so that people might feel more empowered to in building interreligious relationships for their congregations or things like that.
All right, we are running out of time, but I want to read one more email. This is from Maggie, who says, basically, my impression's always been that Catholics really got the message of Jesus, who welcomed and loved all, who basically said to be decent, to listen to each other, somewhat where Pope Francis seems to be leading the church's message, more open and more understanding of the other. I appreciate all of you being here with us this afternoon and increasing our understanding of this very complicated issue. This has been another edition of Living Questions. It's a monthly feature here on Midday. We're producing this series in conjunction with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. You can listen to this conversation and all of the discussions in our Living Questions series online. Come on over to wipr.org/Living Questions. That's where we'll have a link to the report that we've been talking about today. It's called Danger and Dialogue, American Catholic Public Opinion and Portrayals of Islam. Thanks to our guests, Dr. Jerusha Lamptey of the Union Theological Seminary, Father Michael Calabria of St. Bonaventure University, and Jordan Denary Duffner of the Bridge Initiative. Thanks also to the DIS for supplying lunch today for our guests. The DIS is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. Features signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The DIS is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. On the web at thedisbaltimore.com. Tomorrow, a conversation with candidates for mayor of Baltimore, former Mayor Sheila Dixon, Alan Walden, and Joshua Harris will be here, and we'll welcome your calls, your comments, and your questions. We look forward appreciate you joining us tomorrow on the Tuesday edition of Midday. Until then, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.